Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm Ayan Bior in Washington. Here are some of the stories we're covering today, Wednesday, December 21st, 2016. South Sudanese refugees tell Ugandan workers they witnessed many atrocities being committed. And Yei River officials, where insecurity has been widespread, beef up security for holiday celebrations. We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. South Sudanese fleeing the conflict in the country say armed men are committing brutal atrocities and abuses against civilians. The refugees say extrajudicial killings are also common in areas they fled. Simon Peter Apiku has more for VOA from the Ugandan capital, Kampala.
Nearly all the refugees arriving the Bidibidi camp in Uganda's Yumbe district over the past few weeks hail from the former Equatorial state. Most of them fled from Lanya, Yei, Morobo, and Kejikeji. Chaplain Malesh says he fled his village in Lanya earlier this month when government soldiers and proxy militia began shooting villagers indiscriminately.
The Dinkas came to our area at a place called Kirbal, started shooting. This made people to start running. If you see your neighbors running, why should you stay? That is when we decided to escape to Uganda.
Malesh, whose father died in the early 1990s and whose mother also passed away some 10 years ago, says as the shooting continued, many villagers fled into the bush and hid there for days before making their way to Uganda. On the journey to Uganda, Malesh says he and his group met hundreds of other South Sudanese fleeing the conflict because of fighting. Clementina Danga, a mother of four from Morobo, was among them. Speaking in Arabic, Danga says government soldiers came to her home one day in September and killed her husband as the children watched.
When they came to our home, my husband began to run. As he was running, they shot and killed him. We then decided to run off into the bush.
Danga says she and her children did not wait to bury her husband. She says they ran into the bush where they stayed for the next 2 months. Danga says armed men, whom she identifies as government soldiers, committed other abuses in her village, forcing many people to run for their lives. Patrick Taban, another South Sudanese who fled from Yei, says he personally observed many atrocities.
I witnessed very many. The Dinkas shooting the civilians, innocent people, what. That one I witnessed. Even one of my neighbors was shot. The kids were shot. They were just shooting anyhow. That one I witnessed.
Danga says soldiers did not even spare women as they rampaged through villages.
The Dinkas are killing people, including any women they find. That is why we are running away from South Sudan.
Taban says rampant insecurity since July has resulted in a humanitarian catastrophe that is driving thousands of people each day to cross the border into Uganda and the Democratic Republic of Congo.
All the people are seriously, they are suffering. They are suffering. There's no food, what. People are moving up and down. Even more of them are coming on the way. By footing, beating the children, some people even are throwing their bags on the way, even the clothes, what things are washed. That's why people are leaving, people are dying of hunger.
Malesh says people in his village had expected a good harvest this year, but the conflict that erupted in Juba in July between the South Sudan Army and troops loyal to former First Vice President Riek Machar has forced farmers to flee, leaving their crops behind, which is pushing whole villages to the brink of starvation.
Hunger is real there. People fled their homes for the bushes, left behind all the crops they cultivated, such as maize, simsim, and peanuts. These are now being eaten by wild animals and birds.
Danga says villagers fled with their children into the bush. She says she had to dodge fighting forces when she snuck back home to gather food from her own garden.
We survived by eating only cassava. Any time I suspected there was nobody near our home, I would leave the children in the bush and sneak back home, dig up some cassava and bring the cassava to the children in the bush.
South Sudanese refugees arriving in Uganda say as the war drags on, more people will continue to flee. The refugees say the only way refugees will stop streaming over the border is if the conflict ends or there are no more people left in the villages. For VOA News, I am Simon Peter Apiku in Kampala.
The governor of Yei River State says he has improved security for residents in the town so they can celebrate Christmas and New Year's Eve festivities peacefully. But some residents say they cannot move anywhere 5 miles outside of Yei due to widespread insecurity, a claim the governor denies. Tito Justin has the story for VOA from Juba.
Yei River State has been the epicenter of the conflict in former Central Equatoria State, forcing thousands of residents to seek refuge in neighboring Uganda and the Democratic Republic of Congo. As residents prepare for end-of-year festivity, Governor David Lokonga Moses says insecurity has been drastically reduced and says insurgency is coming to an end around Yei River State after military and police were deployed to Yei Town.
People are peaceful. We have put in place. One is with the joint operation, that is police and military police, you know, to patrol the town, and the town is completely calm.
Yei resident James Yata has stayed in Yei through the last 8 months of violence in Yei River State. He says, although security has been beefed up in the town, areas just 5 kilometers outside of town are dangerous and the roads linking Yei to other areas are not passable due to insecurity.
So people are not accessing these places. Like, you're just moving in the town, just around the town, but you cannot go 5 miles beyond the town. So that is something that is very, very bad that is happening now. But you cannot move outside 5 miles beyond the town. Something that not is good. So I'm urging the warring parties to at least make sure that they have a problem with each other. Let them come and settle the issue on a table than making the people suffer like this.
According to Yata, the relationship between the South Sudan Army and civilians is bad and getting worse. He says, although the town is calm, some roads are still being blocked by government soldiers.
My message that is very strongly to the government is that please let the government open the ways. Like Yei Kaya Road, if it is opened, and then it can be very simple for many goods to come from Uganda and other things to the town. So the reopening of the roads is something that I'm really, really commending, and I'm asking the government and the opposition also to allow free movement of the people so that many of the things that are not in the town can be imported to the town.
Governor Lokonga says state officials are already engaged in talks with those who have taken up arms against the government as ordered by President Salva Kiir. He is urging residents of Yei who have fled the town to return home. On Monday, aid agencies in Uganda told VOA that hundreds of Yei residents continue to flee to neighboring countries because of fighting in Yei River State. For VOA News, I am Tito Justin in Juba.
As conflict spreads in South Sudan, so does humanitarian assistance, according to Ashley McLaughlin, the Juba-based communications officer for the International Organization for Migration, which has expanded its work into the Equatorial region in recent months because of the rise in insecurity there. McLaughlin says the IOM has identified at least 75,000 people in Mundri East and Mundri West of Western Equatoria State who have not fled their homes and are struggling to find water and basic sanitation services in the region.
People have exhausted their coping mechanisms. Those who have been unable to flee, often the most vulnerable, the elderly, those that are trapped and unable to leave. So humanitarian conditions are certainly worsening. Access has improved in recent months, which is hopeful, but it's still touch and go, and often you're someplace and the next day you can't go there, and it's also a volatile environment for humanitarians to operate.
McLaughlin says they were able to reach 4,000 households earlier this month in western Equatoria, but she says they need more blankets, hygiene kits, water treatment supplies, soap, and jerry cans to meet the increasing humanitarian needs.
The past month and a half, we've seen an increase of internally displaced persons to Bentiu, to the protection of civilians' rights, which is likely due to insecurity and unity. We're seeing increased arrivals in the POC site and collective centers in Wild Town. All new arrivals, for the most part, are citing insecurity. So as we approach the dry season, there's definitely a concern of increased fighting and increased humanitarian needs.
While the onset of the dry season is expected to make roads easier to travel, McLaughlin says there are other barriers that make their work difficult to carry out.
Roads to the Equatoria from Juba are very dangerous these days. There's often attacks on vehicles. There's often, once you're in locations, restrictions put on humanitarians as to the places that they can go. In Western Barabazal and Wau, we've been unable to consistently reach populations south of Wau Town due to blockages.
Overall, McLaughlin says humanitarian needs across South Sudan have increased significantly this past year as conflict spreads to parts of the country that were traditionally peaceful, including Mundri and Yei in central Equatoria. Aside from the tens of thousands who continue to flee the country, the insecurity has triggered a rise in the number of internally displaced, which is now almost 1.9 million, according to IOM. The leader of the Federal Democratic Party says President Kiir's decree on Monday appointing eminent South Sudanese to spearhead the national dialogue is not transparent. Gabriel Changston tells my colleague John Tanza that most South Sudanese politicians are not neutral and cannot be trusted to spearhead the dialogue on ending the three-year political crisis in the country.
The process the president has laid out in that national address is not inclusive.
What do you mean it's not inclusive? I mean, I've seen the list of names, around 26 people from different backgrounds.
Well, when you come to the appointments of the steering committee members, the advisors to the patron, the resource persons, there is a lot to be said about it. First, it is all about the internal wing. He doesn't mention whether in that dialogue all the opposition groups are going to participate or not. Two, if it is a comprehensive and inclusive national dialogue where the government and the opposition participants take part, then the venue would not be Juba or South Sudan. The venue will be outside South Sudan. Two, the organizers or the facilitators should not be from one warring party. It should be a neutral body.
But I've seen names there, for instance, names like Molan Abil Elier, Bishop Pari de Taban, and Bona Malwal. These are pretty much people who have no stake in the political crisis in the country.
It is not about picking whoever you want to pick. It is about the process. The process must be genuine, must be inclusive, must be transparent and accountable. Those are people selected by the president who is party to the conflict, the ongoing conflict. And he should not have the monopoly of setting up such a committee without consultations with other stakeholders.
And if you're given an opportunity to choose who you want to steer this process, what names do you have in mind?
Well, we in our response earlier, we talk about a neutral body to steer the committee, so that all the participants will come from the government and from the opposition. That one, in that way, it will be very genuine, credible, and comprehensive. For instance, the Kenyans, in 2007, they had their problems. And when they decided to resolve them, they had to go for a panel of three eminent persons from the region. We envisage a similar situation that South Sudan, if they are committed, if the president and his government are committed to genuine peace, then let us have a transparent and accountable system, which we should be helped by those who have been helping South Sudan and who have wished South Sudan good in its new nation.
And these people that you're saying should be neutral, are you talking about UN? Are you talking about the international community? Could you be specific?
Well, for instance, when we went to war in 2013, immediately the IGAD region, with the support of Troika, came in and instituted the IGAD peace process. Now, bodies like UN Security Council, AU, IGAD, Troika, you name them, can also step in again and do the same thing, so that all of us are brought together and we are allowed, as South Sudanese, to critically and realistically discuss the issues that took us back to war. And now when you talk of confining the agreement, I mean the dialogue, to the peace agreement, where is that peace agreement? The IO that signed peace agreement with the government has it split, and only a faction is in the government. And because it is a faction, that's why the agreement is not going anywhere. Where do you have the soldiers? Who are the ones holding guns? This peace process we are talking about can only be done when the guns are silenced, when real peace is brought to the country, and then you go for grassroots reconciliation. So you don't do it while the guns are out there and people are fighting and people are dying.
That's Gabriel Changston, leader of the Federal Democratic Party, speaking to John Tanza in the Kenyan capital, Nairobi, yesterday. You're tuned to South Sudan in Focus from The Voice of America. One Darfur activist is frustrated by what he describes as slow progress in ending the genocide in Darfur. His message when we come back.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today.
If you could attend university anywhere, where would you go?
If I could attend a university anywhere, I have to go to my country, South Sudan. Reason being that South Sudan is a land of my origin. And for it to devolve, it must start with me. True development cannot come from outside.
I personally, I think I would go abroad. Why do I say so? I want to get knowledge abroad that can maybe make me utilize all that I've got to come and improve my country.
I will go for a university in the UK, because I like UK, I like British. They speak good English compared to other versions of English. I like the English.
Because of the assured standard and the regularity of the program, I think I'll go to United States of America.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus. Disappointed by the lack of progress in ending Darfur's genocide over the last 8 years during the Obama administration, an umbrella organization of about 80 nonprofits and activist organizations is calling on President-elect Donald Trump to act swiftly and strongly toward ending the atrocities committed in Sudan's Darfur, South Kordofan, and Blue Nile regions. Gwen Uten reports from Washington.
Eric Cohen, co-founder of an advocacy group called Act for Sudan, says the, quote, stunning failure of President Barack Obama's policy on Sudan must be corrected by the next president.
The Obama administration frequently has expressed grave concerns, but they've actually pursued a policy of engagement, even now with the the Obama administration for 8 years has employed conciliatory diplomacy rather than confronting the regime in Sudan, with consequences for that government's actions in genocide and crimes against humanity. The result has been that over the last 8 years, Sudan's President Bashir and his ruling NCP party have learned that there are few or no real consequences for their actions.
Cohen is hopeful that President-elect Donald Trump will pressure UN member countries into arresting Sudan President Omar al-Bashir when he travels outside his country.
President-elect Trump, as president, to support an end to the NCP's control of the government of Sudan. We want him to support the movement within Sudan for a true democratic transformation. We want him to build a coalition of allies that will arrest President Bashir and hand him over to the International Criminal Court for prosecution. We'd like the president-elect to support the SRF rebels, who are under attack by the Sudan government and who are united with a vision for a democratic, secular, inclusive Sudan and have a program for democratic transformation.
Cohen says Act for Sudan is asking President-elect Trump to not only enforce all current U.S. sanctions against Sudan, but also oppose debt relief and cash transfers to the government of Sudan.
Discourage investments in Sudan and discourage trade missions to Khartoum. Work to increase the economic pressure on Sudan, both unilaterally and multilaterally, thereby strengthening the effects of U.S. sanctions. In addition, we'd like, on an economic side, the U.S. to work to identify, to freeze, and to recover assets that have been stolen by Sudanese government officials so that they can be used for the benefit of the people of Sudan.
Act for Sudan is an alliance of American activists and South Sudanese American residents who represent some 80 organizations that advocate for an end to genocide and mass atrocities in Sudan. For VOA News, I'm Gwen Uten in Washington.
VOA fellow Nadia Taha prepared that report from Washington. Traditional authorities have a track record of solving local disputes in various South Sudanese communities. Professor Matthew Lariche of Memorial University in Canada, Goithon Leek, a South Sudanese diaspora member in Nairobi, and Gatana Dumo, civil society member from Canada, join John Tanza to discuss how traditional authorities can end hate speech on social media.
Yes, John. Traditional authority for a long time in South Sudan has come up with various solutions to problems, from communal to intercommunal, and they've done very well. For instance, a good case was the 99 case of the Unlita peace agreement. That was the reconciliation of the Nuer and the Dink after the breakaway of the SPLA in 1991.
Which was organized by the New Sudan Council of Churches.
1999, yes.
Yeah, I mean, the Wounded Conference was organized by the New Sudan Council of Churches. I mean, the credit goes to the New Sudan Council of Churches. Go ahead.
Yeah, I think they did. They dealt with the chiefs and the traditional authority that were involved. Involving traditional, because these people have a lot of power to their people. Their people listen to them. Members of that community listen to their chief. In some cases, the king. So I think involving these people is going to help a lot.
But how can a chief in Maridi control somebody in Canada?
Exactly. These people have parents in South Sudan, and these parents can speak to their sons. Chiefs can intervene and talk to such. They are known. They are from a community. That is what I'm trying to point out. They are from a certain community, and the background is known. And I believe that these people communicate with their parents. I believe they can be reached through their parents. If their parents can be notified, or their relatives can be notified of the dangers of their actions.
Gaetano, this is boiling down to the issue Professor Matthew was raising about internet warriors. Do you know any internet warrior from the region where you come from?
Yes, sadly enough, yes. I've known a lot of internet warriors. Some of them are here in North America. Some of them are in South Sudan. The way I relate to these internet warriors, they just, you know, they follow up tweets and Facebook status, and right away they start attacking people. I have a lot of personal experience whereby people just attacking me for, you know, for the ideas that sometimes I you know, portray about a problem in South Sudan. So yes, I do know some internet warriors.
Do you have an example? Do you have an example of when you were attacked for expressing an idea? Could you give us an example?
Absolutely. I guess a week ago, we were just talking about the problem of Western Barak Azal, and somebody just came from nowhere and, you know, attacked the saying, you know, Western WOW specifically belongs to a certain community, and they are going to chase us to go back to where we came from. And I told him, my friend, we are all South Sudanese, and WOW as a diverse community in South Sudan. So if you're talking in that language, then I can't put you, because this guy, I know him very well. I went to school with him. We went to the same school together, and I was just, you know, stunned by the way he was talking to me.
Professor Matthew, your take on this?
Well, I think, you know, there's two things when we're talking about traditional authorities. I mean, just like every other group of leaders or of members of a community, right? They can be, you know, they can contribute valuably to reasonable, peaceful, community functioning, or they could be, just as dangerous a risk to conflict and inciting violence. So again, it's a double-edged sword. So the key is, just like in terms of engaging directly on social media or with members of government or in any other group of people, you know, we need to find ways to empower the sort of the rational, reasonable, open people in a community, as opposed to the people who proffer this kind of hatred and whatnot. And that's not an easy proposition by any means.
That's Professor Matthew Lariche of Memorial University in Canada, Goitun Leek, a South Sudanese diaspora living in Nairobi, and Gaetano Dumo, a civil society activist in Canada, talking about how South Sudanese traditional authorities can help reduce hate speech among South Sudanese. Tomorrow, we discuss the role of citizens in fighting hate speech. And that's our show for this Wednesday. We leave you with the song Amba Patilapa by Kuli Papa. Amba yeye patilipa. Amba yeye. Amba yeye. Amba yeye patilipa. Ngira na sodomogo, ngira na sodomogo, ngira na sodomogo beli bibilo gandara. Amba yeye. Amba yeye. Amba yeye patilipa. Ngira na kekeli, ngira na kekeli, ngira na kekeli beti kasreketi. Amba yeye. Amba yeye. Amba yeye patilipa. Ngira na rudongo, ngira na rudongo, ngira na rudongo kubona amba. Amba yeye. Amba yeye. Amba yeye patilipa. Ngala kakuten amba bero. Ku amba langodi kiko. Ngaji kine bindo lenga beri. Ngiro la suda beti manya. Kote ibakana. Patile palo lele kike dingi ki. Kabiku rurunga. Nyo amba. Doti kina ngaji kine lenga beri. Amba ye, amba ye ye. Amba ye ye patilipa. Amba ye ye, amba ye ye. Amba yeye patilipa. Ngira na sodomogo, ngira na sodomogo, ngira na sodomogo beli bibilo gandara. Amba yeye, amba yeye. Amba yeye patilipa. Ngira na kekeli, ngira na kekeli, ngira na kekeli beti kasreketi. Amba yeye, amba yeye. Amba yeye patilipa. Ngira na rudongo, ngira na rudongo, ngira na rudongo kubona amba. Amba yeye, amba yeye. Amba yeye patilipa. We've been listening to Kuli Papa with the song Amba Patilipa. I'm Ayan Bior in Washington. Thanks for listening. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.